This is Meet the People. I'm Kels Hetherington. A federal subsidy program called Essential Air Service, which provides more than $12 million a year to airlines serving 44 rural Alaskan communities, enabling them to offer fares below what the market would otherwise dictate, has come under fire. Senator John McCain of Arizona is proposing an amendment to the FAA reauthorization bill to cut funding for the Essential Air Service program. Peninsula Airways is a beneficiary of the program, and joining me on Meet the People today is the president of Penn Air, Danny Siebert. Mr. Siebert, welcome to Meet the People.
Well, thank you, Kels. I appreciate being online.
It's always good to talk to you about what's happening at Penn Air around the state. You're one of the largest airlines in the state of Alaska, aren't you?
Oh, yes. Alaska Airlines is the largest, of course, but in terms of all the other carriers in the state, Penn Air is the largest regional carrier throughout the state.
How much larger are you than, say, Era Aviation Alaska?
Well, Era Aviation Alaska is really four different companies. As a conglomerate, they're bigger than we are, but they're still operated as individual companies, and we're still bigger than each of the individual companies.
Now, there's been a lot of mergers and acquisitions in the state, you know, within Alaska's regional airlines. Why is that?
Well, in most cases, what's been happening is the competition has been too intense, and as an example, we've recently had two carriers competing against each other that were both losing tremendous amounts of money, and so they merged, and in order to stop competing with each other and then remarket themselves and not compete with each other so that they could survive.
Have you thought about doing any acquisitions or getting involved in any of these mergers, being bought yourself, perhaps?
No. Penn Air is very fortunate that we have a very niche market with the communities that we serve and with the seafood industry, and we remain focused on those two areas.
Now, the program that I mentioned at the start of this program, it's called the Essential Air Service Program, has come under attack from Senator John McCain. Are you concerned that the program will actually be cut?
Well, from the time he announced it, we've been working with our congressional delegation back east, and I think we have a pretty good chance. Our delegation, I think, has a very good chance of stopping McCain from doing that. However, the impact of that, if that goes away, just to Penn Air and just to our region, is a tremendous impact.
Would that affect all the routes or just a few of your routes?
It would affect all, because when Congress deregulated the airline industry back in the 80s, they made a law that in order to have your air carrier certificate, you had to comply with certain things. One of the laws they created was that you could not leave a community stranded if you were the last carrier in the market. For example, if we quit flying to Sandpoint today, they would come in and say, you can't do that because you're the only carrier, and if you do that, we're going to jerk your operating certificate and you can't fly anywhere. So by law, we have to continue flying. What that means in our route structure is the communities of Akutan, Nikulski, and Atka. In those three communities, we received a subsidy of about $1.5 million in order for us to make a 5% profit in those markets. That's what the government allows, is a 5% profit. And so if we no longer had the $1.5 million coming from the government for those three communities, that money would have to come from the other passengers that fly on our route structure so that we could continue flying to those communities.
It's amazing that you couldn't quit flying to communities that were no longer profitable for you. So how much more would it cost the passengers who are flying elsewhere in ticket airfare increases to continue your flying to these other three communities, Akutan, Atka, and Nikulski?
Well, the calculation that I've come up with is it's going to be in the neighborhood of about $25 a ticket more for us to if we lose this program. So everybody in King Cove, Sandpoint, King Sam, and Dillingham, they would all have to pay more money to support those three communities.
How long would you have to continue flying to these communities after the Essential Air Service program was discontinued?
Until another airline moved in so that we could pull out and not be the last guy there.
Oh, so there's no sunset clause in that rule?
No. When Congress deregulated the airline industry prior to that, you had to apply for routes, and the CAB set the price of the ticket. They told you where you could fly, but in order to make it more competitive, Congress wanted to deregulate that industry and allow anybody to fly anywhere they wanted and charge whatever they wanted and not have to comply with the Civil Aviation Board. Congress also realized that if we let airlines fly anywhere they want, they can also decide not to fly someplace. So in the early 80s, they identified all of the airports that had scheduled airline service and said, we will guarantee that these airports will always have air service.
Now, how many other airlines in the state of Alaska receive some sort of a subsidy from the government, at least on certain routes?
Oh, there's got to be at least a dozen of us. Alaska Airlines is the largest. They're subsidized in Southeast Alaska. There's 10 communities on Kodiak Island that are the subsidies there is being split up by two carriers. And then there's subsidies up in the out of Fairbanks that are being flown by two or three carriers out of Fairbanks. So it's the 44 communities in Alaska, it would become a significant thing for the state.
Talking here with Danny Siebert, he is the president and chief executive officer of Peninsula Air, better known as Pan Air, and they're the largest regional carrier in Alaska. How does the government decide which carriers to subsidize and which routes to subsidize? I mean, looking at the list of subsidized routes, Cordova is on the list. Alaska Airlines serves Cordova. Now, they bring a 737 into Cordova and receive a huge subsidy for doing that. How did that get into the mix? It wouldn't seem like Alaska Airlines should have a subsidy to fly a 737 into a small community.
Back when they did this program, they not only looked at which communities had aircraft serving them, but also what type of aircraft. And so if you were traditionally, ADAC is a good example. We know we can do it cheaper, but ADAC is historically been a jet market, and so they put more favor to a jet being in that market as a subsidy. So in Southeast Alaska, they traditionally had jet service, and so the government decided that they were going to go ahead and let them have their jet service.
So when you go to the federal government and you say we want to have flying, you know, we want to have air service to this particular city in Bush, Alaska, how is it determined whether or not they will subsidize the route or not?
It's determined by the airline. The airline first has to start losing money on that route. And then what you do is you take your books, you take your and prove to the government that you're losing money on this route, and it's one of the communities that is guaranteed air service. Then if the Department of Transportation or the government agrees with us that, yeah, you looks like you are losing money, you do qualify for a subsidy. And so then they will calculate how much money we lost on an annual basis and add a 5% profit. And so that's so, for example, I could probably not make the argument. I know I can't make an argument that Sandpoint should be subsidized because at what a comparable fare throughout the rest of the state, Penn Air can make money in the Sandpoint market. And for example, I can't just cut the fare down to $100 a ticket and then go to the government and say, I'm losing money, I need a subsidy. Well, they'll look at comparable distances of other airlines in the state of Alaska and say, no, you're wrong, Penn Air. That's not the way the program is designed to work.
So what is the program intended for? Is it intended to make sure that there is air service provided to distant airports in rural America, or is it to make fares super low?
It was designed to ensure that the airlines could not leave a community without air service, and the communities were identified in the early 80s. And I have no rhyme or reason why they picked which community.
Sure. That's often the case when it comes to government. Do you think that the program will actually be cut?
No, I do not.
And
I believe that we have enough. The program is active in over 35 states. there are places in Montana, North Dakota, you know, some of these smaller towns that are a long ways from a major airport that are they get the essential air service funding. So I have to believe that, and I'm seeing it, there's a tremendous amount of pressure from all 35 states going to their congressional delegations, and I do not think it's going to pass. However, that's not a guarantee.
Now, you say that if the program, the Essential Air Service Program, which provides subsidies to airlines serving airports where they could not otherwise fly to because it would just be too expensive, cost prohibitive, if that program does end, you would still have to continue to serve these three communities, Accutane, Atka, and Okolski, because you are presently the only carrier serving those communities. And that would drive up the cost of doing business on other routes that you have. Would it perhaps invite competitors to enter into other markets like the Sandpoint market? Because if you had to drive up the cost of an airfare going to Sandpoint from Anchorage, would it then make sense for someone like an Era Alaska to come in and compete on the Sandpoint market? How would that affect your industry?
I don't think it would. I don't think it would invite competition in. Sandpoint as a market historically has never been able to support more than one carrier. Reeve was a sole carrier for many, many years. Penn Air tried oftentimes 2 or 3 day-a-week service to compete with Reeve. We were never very successful. And after Reeve shut down in 2000, there were several other airlines that came out and took a look at it. Hagland flew for a little while out there. But again, a lot of what people don't understand is a lot of the markets in Alaska couldn't bear the competitive forces to drive the prices down, because one person or the other is going to lose.
Nationally, you said the program takes place in 35 states, or airlines in 35 states benefit from the program. If the program were to end nationally, of course, it provides, I think, $200 million to regional airlines. How would that affect the regional airline business?
Out there, I don't know, because they do have roads through all these communities, I would assume. Out in the lower 48, they have a highway going somewhere. So I'm not sure what would happen. I would think in Alaska, we would try to figure out some way that we would keep flying to our communities of Accutane, Okolski, and Atka. But I'm not sure how it would affect the regionals in the lower 48.
All right. Now, I know, changing tune here a little bit, I know your family has run Penn Air for years, in fact, since the airline's inception. Why does a nice guy like you want to be involved in an airline in an industry that's really been so crummy when it comes to making profits?
I'm just a pilot. I don't know any better.
Oh, all right. I see. Is Penn Air profitable?
In 2010 and 2011, or 2009 and 2010, we lost money in those 2 years because of the fuel spike. It's taken us 2 years to recover, and we're going to have a very small profit this year.
Is the business of aviation different for the small carriers like Penn Air and, you know, like, I don't know, Era Aviation? Are those companies able to find profits where maybe the big carriers simply cannot?
Sure. That's why you don't see Alaska Airlines flying into Sandpoint or Cold Bay. We have a different market than the bigger airplanes do. So Alaska Airlines will always fly to Juneau, Fairbanks, the big hubs that can support a jet. But in the smaller hubs, they need carriers like ourselves that can make money in a market like Sandpoint.
Now, to the average American, when they hear about subsidies, they're like, well, if airlines want to make money, why don't they fly to where people want to go? How do you react to a statement like that when it comes to fighting about these subsidies that John McCain's trying to cut?
A very typical response we have is build us a road. You don't want to give the people in Accutane a subsidy. Build us a road.
That's a good answer.
You've built highways to every community in the lower 48, but you don't build roads for us.
That's a very good answer. Going back to your business model, how are you able to? How is the business different for the regional airline than it is for the big airline like Alaska Airlines or American Airlines?
I'm not sure about the question. I'll try to answer it. The regional airlines are designed for a specific market, very similar to what we're doing, and actually not even standpoint. They're more designed to fly for an hour, but up in Alaska, we're using the airplanes a little bit differently, but we're still using them in markets that don't make sense for a bigger airplane, such as a jet, and a 30 to a 50-seat airplane is what makes sense, and so that's where you'll see the regionals operating. And for example, we wouldn't do well in the Fairbanks market because people would rather ride the jet.
Do you ever consider going to a jet aircraft?
No, we are very comfortable with our business model of supporting Southwest Alaska and the Aleutians. We understand the fishing industry. We understand the people who live out there. We're from there, and this is who we are, and we're just happy doing what we're doing.
All right. Even as jets get cheaper and you could have aircraft that could make the distance between, say, Sandpoint or King Cove and to Anchorage in a lot less time, you wouldn't consider going with something like that?
Only if it made economic sense. And there's, for example, there is an airplane out there, the Dash 8 Q400. It's a 70-seat airplane that flies at almost jet speeds, 370 knots. Our airplanes fly at about 250 knots, so a lot faster. It would go Anchorage Sandpoint in just over an hour. But it's a $20 million airplane. And compared to the Saabs we're flying, the Saabs are about a $4 million airplane. So if my aircraft acquisition costs went up by 5 times over what they are now, the ticket prices would be extremely unreasonable to operate that airplane in Sandpoint.
Talking here with Danny Siebert on Meet the People. The program airs on the Native Voice One Network Radio and here in Sandpoint and King Cove on KSDP Radio. I'm Kels Hetherington. Mr. Siebert is the president and chief executive officer of Penn Air. Mr. Siebert, I'm curious, when you look at the major airlines like Alaska or American Airlines, Delta, you see them using pretty much the same aircraft. The 737 is a very popular aircraft. The same does not hold true in the regional airline business. You use Saabs, Era Alaska, or whatever the company's called now, they use Dash 8s. They also use Beechcraft. Why is there such a wide variation in the aircrafts that these different companies use? Why isn't there one aircraft that has won a large swath of the market?
Well, it's actually not the same is true in the major airlines. They have Airbuses, all kinds of different airplanes that they use in their fleet. So there is a lot of different aircraft available out there. And it's your old Chevy versus Ford argument. I happen to think that Metros and Saabs are better than Dash 8s and 1900s, and they think those airplanes are better than Saabs and Metros. So, numbers, I could play with numbers and make my Saabs look better than their Dash 8s, but they could do the same thing. You play with numbers, and you can make them do just about anything you want. So it comes down to a preference of what you know, what you're comfortable with. We like the Saab. We have spent a lot of years now learning how to maintain them and keeping them running, and so it's really a personal preference as to what kind of airplane you want to operate.
How many Saabs do you have?
12.
Are you growing that fleet?
No, it's going to stay that size for right now, and I'm not sure where that'll go. My dad is very famous for saying, don't ask me what I'm doing tomorrow because I don't know what I'm doing today.
You had Metros as part of the fleet, and most of those have disappeared. Why did you decide to get rid of the Metros?
One is cost. On a per-seat basis, they would be becoming much more expensive than the Saab to fly. And with fuel prices spiking the way they did, we needed to try and control our costs. And by getting down to one fleet type with the Saab, now we only have one. We only have to train the mechanics on one kind of airplane. We only have to train the pilots on one kind of airplane. We don't have mixed fleet. Parts are all the same. It just creates a lot of efficiencies that help us control costs by going to one fleet type.
Now, you have other aircrafts, too. You actually fly a Grumman Goose, which I don't think any other airline in the nation does anymore. Tell us about that.
Well, we are the only scheduled airline in the world that flies a Grumman Goose. And that's because there is no runway at Akutan, and we're landing in the open Bering Sea, and float planes, it's been proven over the years that float planes can't handle landing in the Bering Sea, but the old Grumman just plops down in the water and acts like a boat, and it does just fine out there.
Yeah, I think you have two Grumman Goose. You recently purchased one of those. Where did you find a Grumman Goose, and how old is the aircraft?
The aircraft was built in 1939, and we found it. A guy in Salt Lake City was just had it, and he was getting up in age, and it was his personal airplane. My dad and I spent several months looking for airplanes, and we identified that there are probably 30 Gooses, Grumman Gooses in the world that are still flying.
Now, did you have any trouble getting the FAA to agree to allow you to fly a Grumman Goose?
No, we've been flying Grumman Gooses since 1977. And so we've got our maintenance program well documented, our pilot training is well documented. We have a good supply of parts except for landing gear. We don't have any more landing gear. It's going to be an issue at some point. So, based on our operational experience, the FAA works very well with us on operating the Grumman Goose.
How has the business changed over the years since you took over as the chief executive officer of Penn Air?
Oh, there are so many changes. I can't begin to tell you how it's changed. The airline industry is always going through tremendous changes. We have the biggest things that's facing us now are going to be crew rest and duty, for example. A pilot today is allowed to fly 10 hours in a 14-hour day, and they can do that for up to 1,400 hours a year. And there's some monthly limits and some quarterly limits. But because of the Buffalo accident in New York, where the girl that was a co-pilot didn't get any sleep the night before, now Congress is looking at changing all the rest rules, and some of the versions I've seen where they're going to limit our pilots to flying maybe 2 or 3 days a week instead of the current 5 days a week they fly, could force us to hire as many as 30% more pilots. And right now I have 100 pilots. So there again is a cost driver forcing us to spend more money to do the same thing we're doing today.
And how much that would drive your cost dramatically. And I would suspect that most other regional airlines are facing the same obstacle. Is that legislation and that rule already in place, or is it something that's being discussed?
It's being discussed, and I don't believe it's in a bill yet, but it is certainly being discussed in committees that Congress has formed. And I do believe because of that accident that there will be changes coming down the road. Exactly what they will be, I don't know. Other changes have been, the biggest change in the last couple of years was the mail, which doesn't affect you guys because airlines don't fly bypass mail in the same point, but bypass mail goes everywhere else in Alaska that doesn't have barge service. And the changes in the bypass mail in the last 3 years have actually put about 10 companies out of business.
Explain how that's happened. I don't entirely see the consequence of that change.
What Senator Stevens did to create bypass mail, it was supposed to be to help the airlines create revenue and keep the cost reasonable to the consumer in the village. So when you go to the post office and mail a package to Dillingham, you might pay the post office 60 cents a pound. Well, based on a very complicated formula, the post office realized, or the airlines, we said, we can't fly it for 60 cents a pound. So we came up with this huge formula that says how much we're going to get paid, and so they'll pay us $1.40 a pound. So the post office collects 60 cents, they're paying us $1.40. It's allowing that mail to fly at the same national rate that is somebody from L.A. will pay to send something to Palm Springs. So it allows goods and services to get flown to these communities that otherwise would have to go freight. And what happened a couple years ago was that there was one community out of Fairbanks that had 12 airlines flying to it every day because it had a huge amount of bypass mail going to it, but only one of them was a passenger carrier. So Stephen said that that's not fair. We need the bypass mail to go on the passenger carriers. So he gave 80% of the bypass mail to passenger carriers and took it away. Before that, it was on an equitable basis where we all shared the same amount of mail. Now, if you're a passenger carrier, you're entitled to 80% of the mail going to a particular community, and the cargo carrier only gets 20%.
Strange. Now, just explain, bypass mail is slightly different than something that's only in Alaska, so we just want our listeners to know that, right?
Right. That's also in danger of being, that's talked about that program going away, which would then have another big impact on regional airlines in Alaska. I think with Congress going into a mode of where they're looking at making all these cuts, that it's kind of scary.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Siebert, for coming on and talking with me about these changes in the airline industry and the threat to the Essential Air Service Program. When will we know what the fate of the Essential Air Service Program is going to be?
I don't know. It's attached as a bill now to the FAA Reauthorization Act, which has been working its way through Congress for at least a year. It's moving very slowly, so I don't know when that bill is actually going to be brought up on the floor. It's still in the committee right now, and I don't know how long that's going to take.
Well, we will be watching closely, and thanks again, Mr. Siebert, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of Penn Air, joining us today on the radio.
Thank you, Kels.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
That was, again, the Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of Peninsula Airways. He's on the phone from Anchorage today. That is Meet the People. I'm Kels Hetherington. This program is produced in Sandpoint at the studios of 830 AM KSDP Radio in Sandpoint, Alaska. It airs live in Sandpoint and King Cove and is distributed by Native Voice One. That is Meet the People for today. Thanks for listening.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.